Hello, you're listening to The Joys of Teaching Literature. My name's Scott, and we're here talking about all things high school English. If you want to know more about me, I have a website, theteachersworkshop.com, and I offer online professional development for high school English teachers, basically trying to make your life more fun, more meaningful for your students, and mostly easier. There's just a lot of challenges that we have doing what we do, and just trying to brainstorm as much as I can about things that work in the classroom to make life, fun and easy. So this week, this is one of the challenges. So sometimes I talk about things that are really fun and things that are really project-based learning and technology and podcasts. But this week, I'm going to talk about something that's really just a sort of run-of-the-mill thing, and that is introducing the novel. I have five basic ways I'm going to kind of talk about how you can, what to say basically when you distribute a novel. So I've done a lot of different things over the years when I first give out a book, and I think there's a certain, I think it's different for every book. I mean, I think that's, definitely important to sort of think about every time. And this, for me right now, I guess I've been thinking about it a lot because I'm teaching a really, really difficult book right now. It's Beloved by Toni Morrison. So in that case, I mean, there are books, and so I'll use another example. So we're starting to study that now, but while I study books in class, my students read another book at home. So once they finish reading that book, then we study that book. So in essence, we're reading slash studying a book for twice as long as sort of we normally would. So I just gave out Kite Runner. And so that was a little bit more, I gave a bit of an introduction to it. Basically, it had mostly to do with the motifs and the themes, topics that they're going to encounter in the book, things to get excited about. Like we're going to watch the movie, first different parts of the book. Sort of read parts of the book out loud and then watch sections of the movie. There's a bit of the introduction. There's an updated version of the book with introduction where he talks about going back to Afghanistan for the first time. And so there's different things that I talk about as far as like the biography of the writer and different things. But I definitely think that every book is different. Some books need a lot of introduction, and some books you don't really need to do too much work because it's a pretty simple narrative. It's a first-person narrator. Those are really easy, right? Because you get things from one point of view. Of course, you're going to talk about, like, okay, so you only have one point of view here. It's probably important that you're not getting anybody else's point of view. Think about that as you read. So there's all kinds of different things that I sort of talk about, when I first give out a book, because it's a super important moment, because obviously it's really hard to get kids to read. They have TikTok, they have Instagram, Snapchat, whatever. I don't even know all the different social media that they have on their phone, that like YouTube, right? Netflix. I mean, the television that they're watching, the clips that they watch are about 5 seconds long. They move very, very quickly. And they're getting this from when they're probably 2, 3, 4 years old, getting high quality, really, really super entertaining video that's engineered to keep their attention, right? So it's not an easy thing to be like, hey, go home and read this 200, 300, 400 page book. You have to sort of hype them up about it. You have to get really excited about it. When it's my favorite book, I tell them it's my favorite book, or I tell stories about, sort of reading the book in college, or, when the first time I read it or something like that. I try to tell stories about if there are any personal stories there. I saw Chinua Achebe in Philadelphia, so I talk about that experience when I give out Things Fall Apart. There's some, like, Beloved, you can't just give that book out and say, like, okay, go have fun, read this book, right? And also, you could kind of warm them up. I used to teach but chapter by chapter. It's like, okay, read chapter 2 and then we'll talk about it. I don't know. I just feel like now more than ever, I'm so glad that I got away from that. So now I just allow them to read the entire book. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother podcast. And I have to cover that in my course. But now I can just talk about the whole thing. I don't want to spoon feed the answers, right? So like you talk about chapter one, you talk about chapter two, already you're starting to interpret the book as you interpret those chapters. You know, the teacher's interpretation is the sort of foundation for how they're going to think about the book. So what I like to do is just give out the book and say, okay, look out for these things. I'll give you some techniques as we move along here, you know, that you can do to make it easier to read, so that you don't feel like you have to do it chapter by chapter, because then you're interpreting the book for them, right? We want to develop independent thinkers who can read books entirely on their own. That's what we want. The objective is read this book on your own. You don't want to have to rely on a teacher to read a book, right? When they go graduate from high school, you want them to be able to read on their own, because that's what they're going to be expected to do in college. It's what they're going to be doing in real life when they go home. If we want them to be readers, they should read an entire book without having somebody to assist them along the way. Of course, there's the internet, but not every book has some kind of like plot summary or analysis to assist them to read. So we want them to read by themselves. So the scheduling of the reading and the pacing and all of that, that's another topic for another day. So what I'm talking about today is just, how do you introduce a novel? What do we say when we give out a book and ask students to start reading it? Another thing to think about before I hit on the 5 points I'm going to get to is that, like, you know, this is not, I'm going to talk about different things I've talked about, but first of all, you don't need to talk about all 5 things, I don't think. It doesn't need to be a really lengthy lecture. We sort of bore them talking about something that they haven't even read yet, but you do want to get them excited about reading it because you want them to read it. There's different sort of, I think, relevant topics that we can cover, sort of topic things that are happening in the news. You want to make it worth reading. You want to give them a reason to read it, other than just like, hey, this is a great book. But novels, it's interesting, right? Because before we get to this, we have to think about, like, novels are just novels. They are stories. They exist in their own world to some extent, right? Like, they just, this is the brilliance of a great novel, is that it doesn't matter who wrote it. It doesn't matter when it was written. The writer crafts a fictional story. It's a completely fictional story, independent of the time, place, and life of the writer. Like, those three things. Like, where was it written? What year was it? What country, right? What city, even, you know, in the case of Dubliners by James Joyce. Some, obviously, like that, you know, I remember reading Ulysses. And obviously, it's hard to say Ulysses is not one of the best books of all time. But there was a huge, huge book that we had to read. This is the Annotations of Ulysses. That was a book in and of itself. That was a 400 or 500-page book in graduate school. We had to read this extra book to understand the book. So it just, you know, again, it's hard to argue that Ulysses is not great. But, I mean, you know, a great piece of literature, that's not really necessary, because you just read it. And you don't need to do extra research, you know, to understand what is just a story. It's just a story. So the characters that you read about, you're getting to know them. You're considering all the things that happen in that book. If the historical, I'll talk about historical context in a second, but if the historical context of that time and place is important, you know, like an example is Count of Monte Cristo. You know, whatever is in historical importance in that story is in the story. Kite Runner is another good example. Kite Runner, you can do some extra research. This is huge study guide that they came out with. I forget, I think it was the publisher. I remember when we first started reading, I took a look at it. But I did, I felt kind of like overwhelmed. I'm like, okay, I'm glad that I knew all this information about Afghanistan. That's helpful when I teach, right? It's when little things happen here, I can use that knowledge that I've gained from this extra resource to help me teach that book. But I also felt like, wow, this is like too much. You know, because the book itself is this map of Afghanistan. It's this, you got the history in there, you got the place in there. You can really see it and experience it for yourself just by reading the book and not without all the extras. That's sort of why we read, right? Because we want to understand a time and place better. We don't want to have to look at, like this is officially fiction, right? We don't have to look at nonfiction to understand a place. We can do it, of course, if we're interested in learning more about a country or something like that. But for the most, so that's something to think about, right? We don't have to stress out about this. I think I used to stress out about it. I remember reading Stephen Greenblatt's introduction to Shakespeare, the complete Shakespeare and the Norton, in college, and thinking like, oh man, I have to totally use this when I teach Shakespeare, because that's what my teacher told us to do, you know, read the, but you know, that's also college level interpretation of Shakespeare. Again, I'm glad I did it, because now when I go to teach Shakespeare, I have all of that stuff that Greenblatt went over in that historical introduction in the back of my head, so that I can like contextualize, say, the witches in Macbeth or the ghost in Hamlet, right? All that stuff, I can speak to the time period and what people believed in that time period, and say how this informed Shakespeare's writing and different things that, you know, are important there. But we don't need to do that. That's why Shakespeare is great, because you don't necessarily have to do that to really understand and appreciate the literature. So that kind of just takes the sting out of this whole conversation, I think, a little bit. This is not something I realized early on. I used to spend 2 or 3 days, which is crazy to me thinking about it now, just talking about like the historical context of the book or the biographical stuff. And it was just too, much. I think there's a healthy amount that we can use it to help our students get interested in it. Like, okay, the writer was like sort of experiencing these things. You know, I talk about, you know, the fact that Shakespeare's son died a few years before the creation of Hamlet, and that his father was terminally ill at the time. Grant, another Greenblatt, sort of talked about that. So that gets them interested. They're like, oh, this is a highly personal. Yeah, it's a ghost story, but it's a highly personal story where he is sort of mulling over what happens to you when you die, as he's writing this very dark book. So I think sometimes it just gives, you know, it's good to give students a heads up about what's going to confuse them as they read, right? And I'll talk about this a little bit in the. One of my sort of main points, which, you know, is that we want to talk about the narrative style and how the book is structured, but we want to just kind of let them know, like, okay, it's okay to be confused. It's actually, in the case of Beloved, the point is to be confused. In the case of William Faulkner, the point is to be confused, right? And the figuring out what, you know, the reason for that confusion, like the uncertainty about what's exactly happening, is always going to be related to memory, right? As that's a really broad kind of concept, right? Because a novel kind of is a memory in a way. You're kind of working through, somebody is telling you this story that happened before. Okay, let's get to the five things. I'm going to try to go through this as quickly as possible. But these are the five things that I consider, you know, that I don't do it all the time with every single book, but they're things I consider as I read. And I mentioned a couple of them already. The first one is historical context. You know, at some point, too much historical context. Think about this. You're about to tell these students to go read this really complicated 300-page whatever book, and then you're gonna load them up with all this other stuff. You know, I talk about Henry VIII sometimes with Shakespeare, and I talk about James, Elizabeth, and how she had all these spies. But some of that, again, some of that helps, because Hamlet, say I'm keep talking about Hamlet. Hamlet is about spying, right? And so it helps a little bit. Like, okay, this is how the monarchies work. But too much confuses them, because they're already dealing with this huge plot line with all these characters and stuff to remember, and then we're loading them up with more stuff to remember, right? If it's not going to help them write the essay about the book, then, and you know, I always say, like, if you want to talk about the historical context of a book, you can do that in your introduction, but for a sentence or two, right? Because your essay is going to be mainly an interpretation of this book. So you don't want to like distract them with all this extra stuff, because you're just going to confuse them a little bit more. But of course, like I mentioned Shakespeare, Jane Austen's another one, you know. Before I get about Austen, I'm like, okay, let's remember the basics here, right? Women could not go to school. They couldn't work. They couldn't vote. You know, they couldn't even be taken seriously in conversation by their male counterparts, right? It's 1814 she's writing, right? You know, they forget because they just read the story. Again, like this is what happens. They just pick up the book and it's like about this girl and, you know, they just sort of start getting the details of their circumstances, and the book itself is the story. So that in that case, you know, Jane Austen's not going to remind you, like, hey, by the way, you know, in 1814 in England, you know, women relied on males to, you know, for financial security because they couldn't do it for them. So they couldn't go rent an apartment and get a job and go to school and, right, like do all that stuff that would allow them to be financially independent and be successful. They just couldn't do that. So Austen's not going to state the obvious, but as teachers, like that's important, like, right, that's an important thing that I think our students tend to forget. Because it accounts for the whole, your interpretation of those characters rely heavily on your understanding of social class and status and all of that. And all of that's wrapped up in who you marry and why and wealth and all of those things, right? So you can't read those kinds of books without those basics, right? So yeah, of course, number one, historical context, anything there that's important. But again, I think it's important to cover it quickly and to not have a lengthy lecture about it. Number two is biographical context. Okay, so you have the historical context, politically, what's going on, what wars are going, you know, if it's all quiet on the Western Front, right? Of course, you're going to talk about the First World War. And what made that war kind of extraordinary for the time. And, you know, there's so much to cover there. But again, the book does it for you, right? The book is about that war. So you don't need to cover it too much. But of course, there's things you can cover there. And the other thing is biographical context. So that is the context of like why the writer is writing the book. But again, that's another narrative. So we're giving them the narrative of history, and now we're giving them the narrative about this person's life. And you're asking them to keep close attention to the protagonist and what's happening to them. And now all of a sudden you're like, okay, by the way, there's this writer that, and they went through X, Y, and Z. And so again, I think it's just another opportunity where in the past I found myself kind of like giving them too much to keep track of. If it's important, you know, in the case of Achebe, for instance, or Hawthorne, Faulkner, I keep talking about. But Achebe, you know, his parents were Christian missionaries. I feel like that's, like, there's some key points there, you know, where he's telling his, like, the generation before him, he's telling that story, right? Faulkner did that. Hawthorne went back a couple hundred years. And so in that case, you got to think about, like, whose story are they telling and right, and why are they doing it? Why are they looking in, back in time, and what are they trying to figure out about the society that they live in or that we live in? You know, and biographical stuff's fun because sometimes the writer's still alive. You know, you can show sometimes I'll show interviews with Toni Morrison on a late night show or something like that. You know, I saw that one. Yes, that makes it kind of like, okay, so this is not like some really, really old writer. You know, in her case, she died recently. So that kind of makes it more relatable that she lives in the kind of modern world. And, you know, that just kind of makes it something that is more immediate to them. All right, so the third thing is the narrative style and the narrative mode of the book. That's the most, I think that's the most important thing to cover, right? You got limited omniscient, like, is it a third person narrator? You know, what points of view are you going to receive? Some of that I think is important for the students to discover on their own. But I think they are at an advantage to understand, like, right? Like, some, I think this is the one thing that really confuses students and prevents them from reading, right? Where they get frustrated with like learning the basic details of the story. Especially in the case of Beloved, like there's so much to cover there. And again, I don't want to like, they haven't started reading the book, so I don't want to like throw them off by again, making it sound confusing. And you want to do it in a way that simplifies the narrative for them. Okay. So like, an easy example is Kite Runner. Okay. So you're going to be listening to letters from people. There's a whole letter from Rahim Khan and his voice takes over a whole chapter. There's flashbacks. There's stories that are told, in the case of Beloved, there are stories that are told about the past in dialogue. So somebody's telling a story, and in telling that story, you're sort of transported back to this thing that happened that you didn't know happened as a reader. And there's a reason why you didn't know it happened, because Setha is like, right, trying to forget what happened and doesn't want to talk about it. Right. So all of the different ways that you receive the full story of what happened is going to be a challenge. So especially with flashbacks, you know, that can be a confusing thing for a kid to keep track of this narrative that is usually linear and predictable. But also, again, thinking about who is telling the story. I always like to read the first page out loud. You know, that's mostly where I talk about who the narrator is and why they may or may not be reliable in the case of, say, The Great Gatsby. You know, there's this Wuthering Heights, you know, that sort of thing. So you're just giving them a heads up and telling them sort of what to look out for as they read. And reading the first page or two out loud, first of all, gets them, there are kids who will not read the first or second page at all, right? So in a way, you're like forcing them to at least get, you know, entertain the possibility that the book is something they can handle, that they can read, that they're comfortable with the language, and that they're interested in the story, right? If they don't read the first couple of pages of the book, then they might not know that they love the book. So if you read the first couple of pages out loud and read it in a voice that speaks to the sort of style of the writer and the mood of the book, then you might, there's a chance there that you'll hook somebody and they'll think, you know what, I do want to read this book, right? Because I used to just give the book out. I'll have fun, read the book, and not read it out loud in class. And sometimes I felt like, oh, I don't want to read it out loud in class because it kind of ruins the first few pages are really important and it establishes like all this stuff. But really, for even as a seasoned reader, if you want to call me that, I tend to read really, really slowly when I first start a book, and then I pick up the pace as I get familiar with the language and the storytelling style, and I can still appreciate it even though I pick up the speed, you know, the pace, I can still appreciate it, right? And so I think our kids are like that too. So it's important to read that first page really, really slowly, where they can, all right, I know this is a character. There might be some questions that come out of the first page, and you're dealing with those already right in class before you ask them to go and read the entire book on their own. Again, that's what I do. You know, everybody's got their thing, but I have seniors. They read the book on their own. I think we should always be assigning books that our kids can read on their own comfortably, right? I mean, I don't know if there's a book we should be teaching if it's like so challenging that we need to go with step by step through the book chapter by chapter so that they just understand it, right? Like, we might want to rethink what we're teaching if they can't read the book by themselves. But anyway, again, another topic for another section. Even thinking about stream of consciousness, sometimes there's a dream in there, you know. So you're just kind of giving them a heads up for what to look out for. So number four, that's number three. Number four is relevant or essential questions. So basically, this is kind of why I made this podcast, because I was doing this activity with Beloved, where there's just a lot. I know when I finished reading Beloved, I was like, I have so many questions. And actually, I was talking to my supervisor, and she was saying how she read Beloved four times after the first reading, because she loved it and she just felt like she needed to keep reading it to understand it. And that's the kind of book that it is. That's why it's such a great book, because you can just keep reading it and get more and more stuff out of it and discover little things here and there. So basically, because I had so many questions about Beloved and why it was structured the way it was, and why Morrison decided to write this book about something that happened so long ago, and just the three chapters with the different characters, and Beloved herself as a character is so confusing. So I just asked them, like, look, whatever questions you have, I'll try my best to answer them. Any kind of weird stuff about the plot that you just didn't get, or why a character did something that you just didn't understand why they did it. I also asked them to write down questions that were like thematic questions, like, you know, like that question, why did Morrison write this book? What was the inspiration for the book? You know, I can talk about Margaret Garner and the slave narrative, the narrative from a slave person that she sort of researched and encountered before she wrote the book that inspired her to write the book. So then what I did is I took those index cards I put them under the projector. So we could just basically read these questions out loud, and just think about them. The point wasn't necessarily for me to answer all of the questions about the book. Like, a lot of the times I was just like, that's a really good question. Like, we're going to explore that question, but that's a good one. You know, and I gave them different things to think about with the plots. Like, all right, well, this happened here and this happened here. So Beloved's like maybe represents this for this reason. And I kind of opened up different possibilities for interpretation, but mostly was just clarifying confusing parts of the plot. Now, what I'm talking about here is after they've read the book in its entirety. So this is not necessarily something they can't create questions before they read the book. I think the questions come after they read the book. Like, what question are you going to come up with before? You don't even know what the characters' names are. You don't know anything about it, right? So you're not, you can't come up with questions until you read the entire book. And so that's why I basically did it not before I gave them the book. Most of what I'm talking about is before I gave them the book. But this is before we started our discussion of the book, right? So it's sort of two different sort of points. So yeah, and even when I remember when I gave Beloved out originally, before they read it, that was my main kind of point. It was like, you're going to be confused. There's going to be things that you don't understand. That's okay. That's sort of the point of the book. There's these layers of memory. There's these layers of history working here. Like, we'll talk about it later, but just do your best. But if there's things that you don't understand, we'll get to the bottom of it later. Don't let it prevent you from like continuing the book and, you know, keep on going. And I'll give you one last strategy to kind of deal with that too. But yeah, like in the case of Beloved too, you know, I kind of mentioned before, sort of trying to figure out here before I gave him the book versus before we started studying the book. But before I gave him the book, I mentioned how Beloved became this kind of political football in a Virginia gubernatorial race. You can read about it in the New York Times, where they were passing out copies of Beloved at the Democrats' rally, at a rally for the Democrat who's running for governor, because it became this, you know, controversial thing where, I don't know, it made this high school student, gave him nightmares, and it became this advertisement for the Republican candidate. Like, why are we teaching these kinds of books about race that make, you know, kids cry and feel guilty about, you know, who they are and all this different stuff? And so you know, they were kind of mocking the whole idea that you can't teach Beloved, because they're like, this is one of the best books of all time. Of course we should be teaching this. So I kind of showed them that article in the New York Times, like, yeah, this is Beloved. Like, we weren't going to read this book. It was in the news, you know, became this hot topic. So anything you can do related to that is also really important. All right. So finally, the last thing to do is, a plot outline or a character tree. So I will give them that before, to clarify here, before they start reading the book. So it's something they can kind of slip in the book. So wherever they're reading the book, they can kind of take it out. Think about how many confusing, especially with Jane Austen. There's so many different potential couples and really big families, little minor characters that you're like, oh, who are they again, right? Some of the characters have names that are really difficult, you know, to remember, because they're like a really long, complicated sounding name. So that it's not like, Johnny or whatever, right? So it's like this really complicated name, like Baird, you know? And so they just kind of forget who's who and how, who's related to who and who's falling in love with who, and right, and all of that stuff. So I sometimes will give, in the case of Emma, there's some stuff I have to white out because it's like spoilers, you know? the other thing that you can do is, for Beloved, I give them this one page sort of plot outline for all the different. It's not even really plot. I'll just put things like Beloved in Denver, Paul D in Denver. So like a whole section is between these two, like basically just focuses on this relationship between these two characters. And so I just would write that down. I would even say what happened in that character. It's like, okay, just discover what happens, but just know that this, it's important. Like, Seth and Denver are the, you know, main characters in this section of the book. And I would put the page numbers there. So the page numbers are like page 112 to page 135, something like that. So like, okay, so I know from in these pages, in this chapter, this is basically the main focus of this. And so they can just keep track. So they know they're not losing like the essential stuff. The important thing is for them to keep track of the essential stuff and not get again, I think kids give up on reading because they feel like they have to know absolutely everything about a book. And if they don't know that, they're not going to be able to be a part of the conversation. It's like, no, we're going to focus on the really important stuff, you know, like the really traumatic stuff that happens to Setha, and the really important lines. But we're going to focus on Setha and Beloved and Denver, right? These main characters in the book. Don't worry about everything. Like, with Things Fall Apart, that's my main message. I'm like, okay, so Things Fall Apart has all of these really complicated sounding names and minor characters, but like Okonkwo is our main character. Let's focus on Okonkwo. He's the be all end all of that book. And then once they know that, they don't feel like, oh, I'm so frustrated with like who's who and what, you know, what's the relevance of all these minor characters, right? So those kinds of little sort of tips before they read can be really important factors in keeping them reading and not giving up because they're just like frustrated or they're not getting it. They feel like they're not getting it. It's like, no, here's the main things that happen in this book. Keep going, right? In Beloved, there's all these flashbacks. So I put a little plus symbol. You could put like a star or something next to the moments that are flashbacks, because when they get confused, like, what's going on now in the book? Well, I don't understand. Did this happen before? Did this happen now? Or whatever. You know, that sort of thing, they can go back to that sheet of paper, pull it out of the book and be like, okay, I'm in this section. Okay, yes, this is a flashback. I thought it was, but I was kind of confused. And so it kind of gives them a roadmap where they can kind of keep going without getting, you know, put off by all this sort of like interruptions to the linear narrative of the plot. Again, I basically tell my students, like, embrace your confusion. You know, like a great movie that you watch more than once, a great novel requires many readings. This is why I read the text out loud as much as possible in class. It gives students a second chance to make sense of everything. The complex narrative structure of Beloved reflects Setha's attempts to forget the past. However impossible, for the sake of her daughter. So that's interesting, right? So the book itself has the structure it has because Setha refuses to tell the regular narrative of the story because she's trying to keep her daughter in a bubble. She wants her to not live the life that she did. That's one of the, I won't tell you the plot of the book, but that's one of the main things that happens in the book. She's trying to keep her kids from going through what she went through. And so that's why we're getting the story in this sort of multi-layered way that we are. You know, the past for Setha comes back to her in the form of ghosts, memories, stories, newspaper clippings even. It's an interesting thing that happens in the book. And then, of course, through the character of, strangely enough, the character of Beloved is how the past kind of comes back to you know, haunt her in a way. So it's not something she can avoid or that anyone should avoid. I think that's the point of the book. Only through talking about the past can she obtain mercy from herself, her family, and her community. Because the full truth involves understanding multiple perspectives, a story that depicts reality will never be simple. Beloved functions more like a long poem than it does a traditional novel. And, you know, that's the interesting thing, right? I think when I said that in class, I could hear kids like, oh, right. Like, now I get it. It's just a long novel. Like, I'm just going to treat this like I'm not going to be shocked by something wild and crazy that I hear in a poem, right? Because it's a poem, and that's what poems do. And they're like, okay, so now, like, I kind of get it. So it's just a poem. There's lines I'm going to understand. There's lines I'm not going to understand. It'll all make sense in the end. That's how poems work. And it's okay that poems are kind of chaotic and wild and crazy because they're poems, right? And so that's, once they hear that, they're like, okay, now, right, I can read this book now because I understand that's why this sounds the way it does. So that in turn will allow them to like really love reading the book as opposed to just like struggling to figure out what happens, right? That's the point, is to love reading and not feel like it's this thing that you know are working on, right, to get so you can get an A in class. That's not the point, is to get the A in class. The point is to love the book, right, and to appreciate language and the beauty of language, right? And that's what we want to get them to do, instead of being like feeling like they're wrestling with it or they're really frustrated with it. And then if they do read Beloved or a really challenging text, you know, whatever it might be, then they can read anything. And that's what we want them to do. That's the kind of students we want. We want students that walk out of our classroom and feel like, you know what? I can read anything because I read this book in my English class. I'm set up for success now in life where no book will intimidate me, right? That's where we want to get them. Thanks for listening, everybody. Please leave me a review wherever you get your podcast. I hope you enjoyed it.